The Secrets of Movies and TV Shows is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to The Secrets of Movies and TV Shows. Hi, I'm Father Joseph Sun, and you're listening to The Secrets of Hoosiers, where we discuss the hidden layers and deeper meaning of the movie Hoosiers. Joining me today on the panel is John Coral.
Hello.
How are you doing, John?
I'm doing really well.
We have a great movie here to explore today, and the timing on this movie, as we'll release this episode, we're going to focus towards March Madness time, that time for college basketball, for the round of 64 for the championship for NCAA basketball. This movie focuses, though, on high school basketball, specifically in the state of Indiana. And John, you were telling me before we began the show just some personal ties that you have with your grandmother being Indianan and just ties close by to the original place where Hoosiers is based on. So do you want to share a little bit about that?
Yeah, I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio, and lived in Ohio most of my life. But my mom grew up in Indiana, and there's a farm that was 30 minutes to 45 minutes away from home. So we spent most of our weekends visiting the farm, visiting my grandma, aunts and uncles, cousins and stuff. And most of my mom's side of the family lives in Indiana, whether it's rural in the farm area or like in small town. I don't have anyone that lives in Milan, Indiana, but we would go out there all the time. And when I watch the movie, I really see a lot of what I saw through growing up out there. And as I watch it, it just brings back memories of home and stuff as well.
So when was the first time that you saw Hoosiers as a movie?
That's a good question, because I was 11 when the movie came out. But at that time, I wasn't as big a sports fan. I was just beginning the last years before getting into football and baseball a lot more, and I didn't see Hoosiers when it came out in the theater. And like I said, it should have been on my radar, though, because of the Indiana ties. But then I can't exactly remember. I know we would see it sometimes like on TV. I know we definitely rented it. And then watching it that over time, especially when we rented it and watched the whole movie, then I just remember initially the music and the play of the basketball players, which with Jerry Goldsmith's music, I really like his music. And it listening to him gets you actually motivated, even if you don't even watch the games, but you can just imagine. And then what really sticks with me too, though, is the scenery of the farmland, the rural settings, going to like family reunions where I would see all my extended family, and you're meeting in a small gym at a, it's not a high school, like a small Catholic school in a small school building, and seeing family members, and a lot of them are just hardworking, salt of the earth kind of people and stuff. And it's as you're watching the movie, and each time I watch it, it just feels like I know people, those people are people like a lot of them. And also it just brings back great memories. Even the little basketball hoop that's on the barn of my,
that used to
be on the barn of my grandma's farm, and it was with the gravel driveway, and it's like you would shoot there and you feel like you're part of the movie.
Yeah. So for myself, I did first see the movie when I was 11, but it was probably around the same time you probably saw the movie, because I was born in 86. So I was born the year this movie came out. Interesting fact, this is also the same year Top Gun came out. It's a great year for movies. 86 was a great year of movies. And I had a sixth grade math teacher that somehow made it part of his yearly curriculum that around this time of the year, we'd watch Hoosiers. I don't know how it lined up to math. I didn't really ask him. I was happy to watch a movie instead of do math. But I was a sports fanatic as a sixth grader. I loved my basketball. And so I actually convinced the same teacher. I'm from Omaha. And so Creighton Blue Jay basketball is huge in Omaha, and I convinced that teacher that we should forego math class to watch Creighton play in March Madness. It really wasn't that hard of an argument. I think he turned on the TV before I even made much of an argument. I remember that this distinctly. Personally, for where I'm assigned as a priest, I'm in rural Nebraska. And the high school that I teach in, our enrollment sits around 50, 60. And the specific high school that we work with here in this movie creates the fictional, but Milan is the one that it's based on. And it's a small school. Enrollment, I believe, was supposed to be around 75 or something. And that's the dynamic. And so I see a lot of this dynamic in sports of lower class sports, or smaller class sports would probably be the better way to put it. Interesting fact of Indiana basketball, though, is that they didn't divide things into classes of sports. So you'll see the smallest little schools play against the big schools in the state tournament in this movie, which is a interesting fact for me, but it makes the story even more inspirational. And so I just think about in my own town, if my boys were to play against a team from Omaha, and the defeat of that is, and being able to win it would be one of my side hobbies. I am the PA announcer actually for our basketball games for both girls and boys. And I love sports in the aspect of faith and the elements that I can see young men and women's lives transformed by the influence of coaches and people in their lives. And hopefully I can bring a little bit of that out as we go through the movie of Hoosiers and to look into that. Let's jump into the film. Enough about ourselves. We've yakked about ourselves enough already. Let's get into the film here. So as I said, it was filmed in 1986, and it's based on the true story of a high school team in Milan, Indiana, that wins the Indiana State Championship in 1954. For the sake of the movie, the school's renamed to Hickory. And John, you read a book about all of this, about the movie. And if you want to give me a rundown of just some interesting facts of prep for the film, of things that they had to get ready to make a film in 1986 feel like a high school in 1954.
Okay. The book I read and I recommend is The Making of Hoosiers, How a Small Movie from the Heartland Became One of America's Favorite Films, by Gail L. Johnson. And what was, I guess the thing that was pretty interesting is they went to a lot of work to set up the town, small towns for the shots that they took in the movie, because it wasn't just one gym, of course. And then one city had the school, maybe town had the school, another one had the gym, another one had the farm, it was that kind of stuff. But what was interesting, though, is how they would have to remove everything that would make it look like that came after 1951. So they would take away pop machines. They would take away the little newspaper holders that are on mailboxes, because they didn't have those back in 1951. Even during the games, they made sure they only did certain cheers and stuff, and no high fives and stuff like that, because that was more later. But, yeah. And for a lot of the cast members, they also had to go, if you had 50s attire, that was good. But then otherwise, you would have to maybe get a haircut or your hair slicked back or whatever it would be, and then put on all these clothes that didn't give away the time. If somebody was wearing Reeboks, that would just, the director was afraid that it would take people away from the movie. If they're like, wait, that's not 1951.
One of the interesting things, if you just look at the shots of the scoreboard, which, you know, it does do some of those 80s montage video scenes for the games, but they'll show this clock on the scoreboard, and it's an old analog ticker clock. And so which I'm guessing that was what they were using in 1950. They probably didn't have the digital. They definitely didn't have the digital, but so that's a small detail that they pay close attention to in there.
And then also on top of it all, they had, I think if I remember right in the book, it said that there were 5 of those scoreboards they had to find, and none of them worked. And they found the one guy, some guy that could fix them. And I can't remember his name, but I think he got to be the scorekeeper in those games, because he knew how to fix those old scoreboards. And then he got to take part in it that way. It was pretty neat.
So now the part of the head coach. There was a well-known actor that was originally wanted the part for this, is what I heard.
Yes. Yeah, that was, I forget which, if it was the director or the writer. I think it was probably the director, David Anspaugh, but I could be wrong. Had a connection with Jack Nicholson. And trying to get the screenplay that they wanted to put on as a movie, they ran it by him. And he said he loved the movie and he'd like to be Norman Dale, the head coach. But unfortunately, in his case, he had other commitments at the time, so his schedule couldn't work for the movie. And then that's when they went to Gene Hackman.
And Gene Hackman ends up being a good amount of this movie, and the personality of him as coach really helps for the character formation of the movie and things. And so it's as big as a name as Jack Nicholson is, it's probably fortunate that Jack's schedule didn't line up as it did, that Gene was able to be the coach. Others might have different opinions on that. But one other thing we mentioned was that the, quote, actors of the film aren't actors, except maybe for one of them, for the basketball team. Go into that a little bit. Why did they choose to have basketball players instead of actors?
First, they felt it was easier to teach a bunch of basketball players some acting skills than it was to teach actors basketball skills. All but one of them that are on the Hickory team and a lot of the other teams were either playing high school basketball or some were even playing college basketball. And because when they had the open casting calls for stuff. But the reason why the one player on Hickory's team was an actor and wasn't a basketball player first is because he had a more dramatic role because of his role with his dad, Shooter, who was an alcoholic. And they had to build in his emotions and stuff that they thought an actor would be better to handle.
And we'll get into a little bit of more why that makes sense when we talk a little more about the different themes that happen in the movie. One of the other characters, and I think it's important that if they would have, I'll take a shot at my own state. If they would have cast this movie, the name of the team is Huskers, so they could have very well done this. If they would have cast this movie in rural Nebraska, it wouldn't have worked. The state of Indiana and basketball. When you hear Indiana, usually you should think basketball. And so it was important for Indiana to be the place it was. And you were mentioning that the writers and had a intentionality on that, on making sure the feel of Indiana was in the movie.
Yeah. The reason why was they said that, especially with the writer, I think it was him, Angelo Fizzo, who grew up in Bloomington, and he remembered when they filmed the movie Breaking Away, which is about the little 500 that happens at Indiana University out there. He said he loved the movie and stuff, but he said what got him was, when you look at the town of Bloomington, it just could have been any college town in the end because of the way the actors that they put in there, because he would see those actors portrayed and he'd say, this doesn't feel like people I see Bloomington, the people I know. So when they cast the extras for the movie, they were primarily from Indiana, and like 300 kids in the stands, and like I said, the basketball players, and a lot of the extras were just specifically for Indiana because he wanted not just to have the feel of basketball, but he wanted to have the feel of Indiana basketball and the basketball, the hysteria that it comes about, Hoosier hysteria with the basketball play. And so that's why he really focused on getting that, because he wanted to make sure that it wasn't just another sports movie, but it was an Indiana sports movie, basketball movie.
Yep. And so Indiana is really a character itself in the film. And so there's scenes in which they're in the barber shop, which may seem outdated now, but trust me, it's still the reality. I still will go to get my hair cut in a barber shop, and being the priest in town and also being the PA announcer, I'll get pushed a little bit about what I think about, how the coach is doing certain things and all of that. Also happens that in Nebraska, the gas station's the place that happens. You share coffee and you chat about, depending on the season, football. We chat a lot about volleyball in Nebraska, which shouldn't be too much of a surprising. Not just Nebraska volleyball, but high school volleyball is insanely big. It's scary how big it is. But this idea of the whole town being part of things, there comes up moments that the whole town really is a character in itself. And so I think that's an important character to put in there. How about just brief 4 minutes or so? Can you give a plot synopsis of this? Give me the IMDb rundown in your view there.
The movie focuses around a new coach, Normandale, and he's definitely has a mysterious past. He comes from Ithaca, New York, and people are wondering why he's coming to this small town in Hickory, Indiana. And it's from, he gets a call from an old friend after the prior high school coach passed away. And when he gets to town, he finds out the star player of the team, Jimmy, is no longer playing because he's struck with grief ever since the old coach passed away. And his caretaker, Myra, has encouraged him not to play basketball either because she thinks he should work on an academic scholarship. And then Hickory is a small town, and the people are very hesitant to accept the way Norman does things. And that's seen through practices, and he has his own ways of doing things. And he's really stubborn on doing it his way that is different than what the town is used to.
Yeah, there's that one moment that he tells them that they have to pass the ball 4 times before they can shoot. And the parents don't take too well to that.
And also in the practices where they're dribbling around stationary chairs and things like that, and learning how to move their arms up and down for defense and things which had nothing to do with shooting.
One of the towns I was in, there was a high school basketball coach, and the first entire week of practice, the basketballs remained locked up. He wouldn't let the kids touch a basketball for the entire first week of practice. Most of it was because they were doing conditioning, but also they'd sit there and try to jack up Caitlin Clark 3-pointers instead of learning the game. And so that was his antic. And I remember parents not taking friendly to that either. So there's the things of that. Norm becomes the coach then. And then they start off a little rough, don't they?
Yes. And the townspeople are fed up. And even Myra is a school teacher at the high school. And she becomes the acting principal when Cletus, who called Norman to take the job, has some heart issues and has to step away from being his assistant coach. And the townspeople come along and for a town hall meeting to get rid of Norman.
I found the vote very interesting. I would be, and maybe this is the way Indiana basketball works, but I would be horrified if the town was allowed just to do a vote on an up and down without a school board, without anything. The vote whether or not to keep him is based on everyone in the town passing him little paper slips, which I wonder about the accuracy of that in the movie. They seem to be accurate on everything else, so maybe it's true. Did they mention that at all in your book there?
Not that I'm aware of too much.
Not that you're aware of, okay.
But so, like the original Milan basketball team, though, wouldn't have had that issue because their coach was really young and stuff. So that was something different and I think liked and stuff. So it was, but for the tension in the movie.
That's a little movie tweak there. So he ends up surviving the vote. And the reason he ends up surviving the vote is because Jimmy, the star player, ends up putting his support behind him. And we'll get a little more into that when we go through the themes. And so from that point on, really, we start seeing a turn in the team, right? And then we see the great 80s video montage going through all their games. And they end up making the tournament. I forget what they call each of the levels. Every state has their own way of doing it. I was reading something. I think they had to play 9 total games to get all the way through the state tournament, which is just, that's a lot of basketball. And they were saying even on some days they had to play 2 games. The Milan team had to play 2 games in a day, which if you look at the fit of some of those games, that would be a daunting task in itself, which makes it even more impressive. So long story short, they win the games. They go on to play, win the state championship. But then also we're going to see some character development. You have a little bit of a romance that happens that between Myra and Coach that they end up falling in love, which I don't know. That's one of my elements that I think the movie, the writing probably gave it away a little too early. That was going to happen. It was pretty obvious, even as a sixth grader watching the film, from the first moment they start arguing with each other, you're sitting there going, oh, they're going to kiss at the end. And so you see that build in there. There's a role of faith in the film. And obviously, it's 1954. The role of faith in schools is different than the role of faith in schools we see today. And so you do see that role of faith. You see the minister praying before the games with the team. Now, I've been at Catholic schools, so I've always been. That's still the reality. Current school I'm at, we do a cooperative between the Catholic and the public school. And when I do pray with the team, usually it's after the game, and it's the students that initiate it and all of that. And so it's a totally different world we live in of high school sports and prayer there. But so you have that. But there's the themes that we see in the film, I think, have a very deep connection to faith. And so I want to point out three themes, and we're just going to run through those themes a little bit about the film and see where each of those tie in. So the three themes that I pointed out here that I think stand out are compassion, teamwork, and redemption. And so I want to go through each of those elements, and we can talk about the characters and how those wind in and out with the characters of our movie. So first with compassion, and we see this virtue of compassion both modeled and not modeled in the film. And so just looking at some of the major characters, first, we have the head coach. So the head coach that's hired, his name's Norman Dale. And as we mentioned, he was a coach in Ithaca, New York for a college basketball team. And so we will learn in the film why he was fired. And he was fired for punching a player or hitting a player. And he talks about how this replays in his head over and over again. And he thinks if he just replays it in his head hard enough, he can stop his fist and stop that moment. And so there's this hardness on himself in it. But the very fact that he's hired, that the principal hires him, is a sign of compassion in itself. John, what do you see in that, of the compassion shown to Norm there?
I mean, there definitely was compassion, because when Cletus, the principal, hires him in the early scene, he said, I think Norman Dale has just come off of 10 years in the Navy. And because he's no longer allowed to coach in Ithaca, New York at the high school, or the whole state of New York because of this, at the high school or the college level. And at the beginning of at the beginning when he's talking to Cletus, he tries to explain it a little bit. And he's, don't explain, just let, you know, you got a clean slate here. And he just, and that's the compassion, is here he comes and it's okay. I'm giving you this opportunity, you're a friend of mine, and start fresh.
Yeah. When I was watching that, I was just thinking, I've been through a couple processes of hiring coaches, and I'll be honest, the first thing I do when we get an application in for a coach, if it's not a parishioner that I already know, is I Google their name. And so this movie, this compassion that Cletus has on Norman Dale would not even be possible today, because Myra has to go and search through the library catalogs to find a newspaper article about why he was dismissed and take some significant time to dig into it. Shooter knows why he was dismissed, because Shooter is just a basketball junkie. And so he knew about the team that he coached in Ithaca, and it was a really good team is what they say, and he knows about why he left. And both of these characters, both Myra and Shooter, extend their compassion to Norm in not bringing up his past to the entire town, of not being at the barbershop or the coffee shop and letting the whole town know about it. They sit on that truth. And this ends up serving for Shooter a little bit, because what does Norman end up doing for Shooter?
He ends up, after Cletus can't be his assistant coach, he invites Shooter to be his assistant coach, who's the town drunk.
Yeah, so the principal is his assistant coach. And just to be clear here, this is not weird. In a small school, the principal being on the bench next to the head coach is probably more normal than not, to be honest. And so Cletus, the principal, is the assistant coach, which is normal. And so Cletus has his heart trouble. And so Shooter is invited on the team as the assistant coach. But his hardest critic, being invited back on the team, and the one who has the least compassion on him and with some understanding there, is his own son. And this is the one that we mentioned. This is the one person on the cast of the team that's an actor, not a basketball player. Yeah. And so they felt this important in casting the movie that this background of the broken home and his relationship with Shooter, his dad, is important. Do they ever say Shooter's real name in the film?
Oh, shoot. I can't remember. I might have seen it in the book or something. But if you look at the credits, I think it just says Shooter.
It just says Shooter in the credits. And the story behind it, and this shows lack of compassion. The reason his name is Shooter is because he missed the shot. He had an opportunity to win a game and he missed the shot. That was what my memory serves right of the reason of his nickname of Shooter. And so there's even a lack of compassion there of his own nickname. But he's the town drunk. And most of the scenes of the early games, you see this guy sitting there yelling uncontrollably at the refs. I think he gets thrown out a couple times of the game for being a drunken mess, right? And coach sees in him something that no one else sees. And he allows him to become the coach. Now, there's one scene in particular, and it's one of my favorite scenes, in which Coach Dale goes and he's yelling at the ref. And the ref's kind of got to know him by this point. And so they're not throwing him out as quick. And he just looks right at the ref and he says, "Throw me out of the game. Throw me out of the game." And his reason for wanting to be thrown out of the game is to give Shooter that chance and that opportunity. And I don't think the movie really shows us what the end of that first game was. I think it just assumed it was a loss where he takes the...
Yeah, because I would assume that's what it was, because that was also before the town hall meeting, I think.
Oh, yes, it was. It was right and before the town hall meeting.
So you have, so you see Shooter, after he gets called to do it, he just slumps in his chair and by the court side and doesn't know what to say or do. And you can see this disgust and or sadness in his son's face that he didn't help. And Coach Dale is sitting by himself in the locker room because he knows the town hall meeting's coming up and he's relying on him to try to win the game. But
I think there might be another element, and this doesn't really get spoken in the film, but is he setting Shooter up maybe that if he doesn't survive this town hall meeting, that maybe Shooter gets that opportunity to be he's the assistant coach de facto at that point, right? So if they dismiss the coach at that moment, I don't know, is Shooter the head coach? I don't think so.
No, I don't think he would be.
I don't think the town would give him the chance. So maybe I'm reading a little too much business into that there. But
yeah, I think it would have gone back to
the interim coach, which was one of the dads of a player, right?
Buddy's dad.
Buddy's dad.
Yeah. And then that, so early on, when after he, Norman Dale kicks the guy out of the practice because he wants to do it his way and not the old way that they've been doing it in Hickory, then Buddy storms out. And then, unfortunately, I think a cut scene or whatever, you don't find all that. And then eventually he shows back up on the team. But yeah, so it probably would have been him, would be my guess, because he looked pretty happy when the vote went against him. And he was ready to probably take over.
Ready coaching. To take over, yeah. But what ends up happening is the vote goes against him. But remember first, the reason Jimmy ends up coming in support of Norman, it's just not out of the blue, right? Norman has this attitude towards Jimmy. And Myra's expecting when Norman comes over to talk to Jimmy that he's going to hassle him like the rest of the town with the "we want Jimmy" chance to come back and play, despite the fact that it's probably not in his best interest to come back and play yet. At least to Myra's opinion, it wasn't in his best interest to come back and play. And so Norman approaches him, and there's a scene that they're on the court, right? That he's on this gravel court that's an old farm hoop. And what is it that Norman ends up saying to Jimmy there in that moment?
Something along the lines of how he's never met player or someone that has a bigger, for basketball. I forget the exact words. And how, I don't remember the quotes, but I just remember how he said, in his mind, no player is greater than any other player. Mm-hmm. And whether you're on the team or not, he really doesn't care.
Yep.
And then he just leaves him that way.
He leaves him that way, but he gives him the space for his own grief, too. Mm-hmm. And I think Jimmy sees a little bit of that. And you end up seeing then Jimmy storm into the town hall meeting and ask to say a few words. And his ultimatum ends up being, I'm going to return to play, right? But here's a stipulation. If I return, coach stays. If coach leaves, I don't return. And so then they do a hands up, hands down vote. And it's pretty clear that the only people voting against are your ones who probably would benefit from being coach of the team, basically. And so you see the turn of Jimmy turns the town towards Norman, and that's when things start turning into things. And so then it gets us, I think that's a good way to go into the second element we pointed out of teamwork, that the movie highlights this element of teamwork and the importance of teamwork. And one of my favorite quotes from the movie, and it's probably the most iconic sports quote of some movies, right, is coach says, five players on the floor functioning as one single unit, team. No one more is important than the other. And he's hammering on that. If you think about the fact that he has them pass the ball four times before they shoot, if I'm passing the ball four times, that's implying, it might not necessarily be the fact, but it's implying I'm passing the ball to every member of the floor, right? And there's this teamwork and this notion that not one person is more important than the other on the team. As a big college basketball fan myself, one of the reasons I enjoy college ball and high school ball so much more than the NBA is this, the teamwork aspect. I don't know, John, how much do you watch NBA ball?
I've watched it some. I am a Cleveland Cavaliers fan. Yeah.
It feels like the Harlem Globetrotters at some points, that it's just one guy.
What I saw one time, though, was a game, my first game, yeah, there's a lot of backing down one-on-one kind of stuff where late in the game, let's just get the ball to the best player and let them go at it. And so that's definitely an NBA thing.
Yeah.
a lot more.
And so this element of teamwork and not one player being more important than the other. And you see this, it's not just those five players on the court. It includes the players on the bench. Is it Ollie that's the little runt there?
Yeah.
And so Ollie, that is the guy who makes the winning shot there for to end up getting him to state, right?
Yes, he hits those two free throws.
He gets those two free throws, and that's huge. And so it's not just, there's not one player on the team in the five starters more important than the other. It's every single person on that team is important. And so there's a good lesson to learn from that in teamwork. Last element that we wanted to focus on was redemption. And we see that the characters, they end up having redemption. They end up overcoming their struggles. They end up fighting through. And yeah, each character, I think, really has a failure of nerve. And so you see Norman has those failures, especially around the time that his tenure as a coach is called into question. Shooter, we mentioned that moment in which he is handed the reins over when coach gets ejected and he just freezes. But we also see a later moment in the game that the same thing happens, that coach gives him another chance, right? And he doesn't freeze, and he ends up coaching them to the victory.
Mm-hmm.
But this redemption, it doesn't just happen by each of them pulling themselves up by their bootstraps, right? And just fighting through it on their own and having that old mentality of just fixing themselves up, right? But it's through the eyes of another person that they receive that redemption, right? And so we see first with Norman, right? It's through Cletus that he's given this second opportunity as a coach and this opportunity to be able to affect these young men's lives and to coach basketball again. And Cletus sees something in Norman that Norman doesn't see in himself. Then how do we see this between Norman and Shooter? How does he see the qualities in him there?
Norman, as the town drunk, everybody just sees Shooter, including his son, and rolls their eyes or whenever he comes by and stuff, because he tries to get money from Cletus at the restaurant one time, and it just, his son says, give that money back and stuff. But then when Shooter makes a visit to Norman's house or where he's staying, Norman sees that he is like a basketball, well, junkie, encyclopedia, whatever you want to say. And he has all this knowledge because he gives tips on the next opponent, saying, hey, you know, they got small players, so you don't want to play a man-to-man. You want to crowd it by the basket, make them go deep shots and stuff like that. And when he sees that, then that's when he gives them the chance of being an assistant coach. But then he says, look, you're embarrassing your son. Yeah. And this is a layer time. So he says, you've got to make sure you're sober. You got to make sure you're clean cut. You got to wear a suit. And that kind of, you know, so he gives them things to do, but he gives him that opportunity because he knows Shooter does have really good knowledge of basketball and
you giving point out an opportunity. Yeah. You point out an important aspect of the redemption there, and it's that there's stipulations and there's requirements that Norman puts on it. Often as Catholics, we hear people say, Jesus ate with tax collectors and sinners, right? Yes, but he also told them to go and sin no more. Part of the redemption includes turning my life away from sin and towards grace, right? And so you see this same element here that Norman requires a turn and a change of heart to happen in Shooter for him to be the coach. And if Shooter would have said, nope, I'm just going to stay with the bottle here, Norman would have walked off and found someone else and would have been for a really lame movie. But what he ends up doing, right, is he brings him into it and requires this change. Now, Shooter ends up relapsing, right? And there's this scene where Norman's dunking Shooter's head in the sink and trying to sober him up. And Shooter ends up going into the hospital, into kind of a halfway. And the writer found something essential in this, right? Or was it the actor for Shooter? There was something about this that they wanted him to stay and not leave to go back to the stadium.
I want to go back just a little bit though with Shooter, and that when they have, before he goes into the rehab, he has that second opportunity to coach the kids. And when he's there, and that's when Norman gets himself thrown out of the game. So he gives him that opportunity one more time now that he's had more experience and stuff. And he's freezing in the head, like a deer in headlights again. And his son, who helping with the redemption, says, hey, do you think they're going to pass it to number four? And he opens the door of dialogue a little bit through basketball with Shooter there. And then Shooter comes up with he's okay, yeah. And then he gives the defensive instructions. And then they call timeout. And then he comes up with the famous picket fence call and stuff. So part of his son is part of the redemption there too.
That's important. His son has a change of heart
and opens up for that.
And opens up that path. And so again, it's through someone else's eyes that Shooter, through his own son, is able to receive redemption as well.
What I was going to say is what the writers initially wanted to do though. So when he relapses though after that big game, actually, right before sectionals, I guess, is where Shooter, I think, had his issues. Or I guess he missed his shot in sectionals. And so before they play their sectionals game, he doesn't show up to be the coach. And the son's like, yeah, he's having a hard time. And then he shows up eventually drunk. And then he goes into rehab. It must be like a PTSD kind of thing when sectionals hit. He's reliving his bad memories and falls off the wagon. And then the reason why Dennis Hopper, though, was a great choice for the character was when he was cast in 1985, he'd only been 2 years sober. And he had dealt with a lot of addiction and substance abuse. And he was very serious about the character of what it's like to be someone who's struggling with that. And when he went into rehab, the writing in the script said, and then he at some point breaks out of escapes from the hospital and goes to watch the state championship game. And he said, no, we can't do that because if you really want to believe Shooter is committed to his sobriety, he's got to stay in there and got to fight through it. And sure, he loses that opportunity to see them win state, but he said it would just be a wrong message as a recovering addict to have him do that. And then the writers went with that because they wanted to have the happy story of, oh, look, he gets to watch the big game. But
it ends up being one of the better elements or one of the great elements of the film is him in his room listening to the radio, cheering the team on for the state championship and going off on to the nurse about everything he knows. And the nurse is like a statue sitting there. It's a little entertaining there. So that importance of the actor saw on making sure that message of redemption and that message of for sobriety stayed strong in the movie and wasn't overshadowed by basketball.
Yeah, because some of the stuff, Myra's character, who's not keen on basketball in the first place, is centering or kind of brings up the points of there are more important things than basketball. And this is one example. So even though people think she might be like a stick in the mud or something with the way she doesn't care to be excited like all these other folks, at least early on, this shows that sobriety is more important than taking these steps.
John, we're getting close to running out of time. So any other thoughts that we didn't cover on the movie, interesting facts or tidbits you wanted to add in?
Yeah, I don't know. There were just a lot of neat things. Like in the championship game, they chose Hilliard Gates to do the play-by-play announcing, and he was the radio announcer for the 1954 Island Miracle game. The blackboard. That was it. In the championship game, there's a blackboard where it lists the South Bend players, and all the names that are listed on the board are actually the names of the Hickory players in real life. So Boyle is one of those names, and he's like their top player that they have to cover. And I forget which character he was, but so it was something actually that Gene Hackman came up. So it was to put their names up there like that.
Put their names in there in the game. And keep in mind, most of those guys were basketball players. And so they're putting them in there in a basketball element. A little tip of the hat to Indiana there is that the Butler Fieldhouse that they play in, which it was called Butler Fieldhouse at the time. Now it's called Hinkle Fieldhouse, named after Coach Hinkle, who coached there for the Butler Bulldogs. And still to this day, probably one of the most intimidating environments in college basketball to play in. And it's the same field house that they filmed in. I'm sure they had to do a little bit. And this was amazing because they had to make Hinkle Fieldhouse look like it was 1950 in 1986. And so that there's some significance there that they had to. But yeah, Hinkle for Butler, for being a Creighton fan, I'm a Big East basketball fan. And it's one of the most dreaded places to play. And so that's a fun little element there in the movie, is to see Hinkle Fieldhouse in a movie is fun. Is there any other comparable movies, sports movies that stand out? I think now, was Rudy done by the same director?
Yes, I think it was both of them that both did Rudy.
And so you can see similar elements in Rudy.
Right. And like they did with Hoosiers, they demanded that they would film that movie too on site in Notre Dame, not somewhere else. And to make, and after Hoosiers, they had more input in to be able to do that.
Rudy came after Hoosiers.
Yeah. And the thing, I don't know about comparable movies in the sense that I really like like a lot of movies, but like a sport movie like The Natural. But I think what made Hoosiers really good is sometimes like a movie like The Natural, you have a character seeking redemption in Roy Hobbs, but he's the potentially the greatest of all time, and then runs into Barbara Hershey in that movie with a bad result, and then he has to come back 17 years later to try to live out his dream. And the thing I liked about Hoosiers is a lot of their issues seem more relatable. I don't know what it's like to be one of the best players of all time. Could you be angry and say something wrong or do something that you regret and you need to seek redemption for, or forgiveness at least? Or do you know somebody who has a substance abuse problem and stuff, or like on dealing with those? These are all kind of relatable things that a lot of people deal with. And I think that's what makes Hoosiers a strong movie too, is when you're watching it, you can relate to some of it versus some other movies. But
we have a lot more in common. As human beings, we have a lot more in common with small town Indiana than best MLB player or things like that. So I think there's a element there. That's all we have today for The Secrets of Hoosiers. Did you like our discussion? You can give your feedback here. But first, before we get into that, we'd like just to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create The Secrets of Movies and TV Shows. Including today, we want to thank Jason E., Ricky T., Jim H., Adam N., and Lucas D. Their generous support at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue The Secrets of Movies and TV Shows and all the great shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. That's it from us. What do you think of Hoosiers or what we had to say about us? Let us know by commenting on the show posting at sqpn.com/secrets or on the StarQuest Facebook page, or send us an email at secrets@sqpn.com, or visit the StarQuest Discord page community at sqpn.com/discord. Until next time, John Quirrell, thank you for joining us for The Secrets of Hoosiers.
Thank you. I had a great time.
And once again, I'm Father Joseph Sun. Thank you for listening to The Secrets of Movies and TV Shows on StarQuest.
Here's another show on the StarQuest Network you're sure to enjoy. Let's Science. Find the show wherever fine podcasts are found or at sqpn.com/science. We'd like to thank Patrick McCaffrey of Moonshadow Studios for editing this episode. To have your audio edited professionally and with care, check out more of Patrick's work at moonshadowstudios.biz. That's moonshadowstudios.biz.